I love it.
Wow. Wow.
It's just like, wow.
What I mean to say is like,
cold open should just be us saying, wow, wow,
wow,
wow,
wow,
wow.
Wow.
Amazing.
Wow. Hey, hey, hey. Welcome back to another episode of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is government, civic work, and urban planning. We are talking about ladies who were involved in public projects or services.
Before we start, don't forget, we're not experts. We're just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends, having a fun conversation. If you hear an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
This week, we will be talking about Belle Moskowitz, who was a pioneer in social reform and a political strategist in the early 20th century. I'm Jessica Rogers, celebrating Frances Perkins' birthday this week, based out of Miami, Florida.
Hey there, I'm Lizzie Rahr, looking forward to some quilting time in San Francisco.
And I'm Nurjiti Rivas, looking forward to playing the game It Takes Two with my husband in Houston, Texas. It's a cute game.
Ooh, that sounds like so much fun. So before we begin, I would like to give a shout out because this episode was a listener suggestion.
Cool. That's awesome. Who was the listener?
Friend to the show, Gable Compadre, and fellow podcaster, Mark R. LePage from Entree Architect, recommended the lady we will talk about today. Coincidentally, when he recommended her to us, it fit perfectly within this season's theme. So, yay!
Yay! Thank you, Mark.
Awesome possum, Mark!
Yes. Also, like you'll find out later, but it's so fitting that we're telling her story this week when it's Frances Perkins weekend, Frances Perkins birthday week. So it's like, you'll get the connection. I'm foreshadowing, but it's like, oh my God, so fitting. All right. Belle Lindner was born in Harlem, New York City, New York, on October 5th, 1877. Her father was Isidore Lindner, a watchmaker, and her mother was Esther Freyer. Her family immigrated from East Prussia, Germany in 1869. Her family would run a small jewelry shop on 3rd Avenue.
Ooh, a family of immigrant entrepreneurs. Sounds like the American dream.
Sure does.
Belle would attend Horace Mann High School for Girls and briefly attend the Teachers College at Columbia University. Some sources say that she originally wanted to become an actor, but ended up teaching children acting, or what was referred to as the dramatics.
I would love to take a class on dramatics. Sounds like an easy A for me.
I think you would do well, yes.
All right. So back in 1900, Belle joined the Educational Alliance, a Jewish settlement on the Lower East Side of New York. She started off by taking on tasks like organizing events on the roof garden and handling women's activities. But before long, she became the director of entertainment and exhibits. Her role was pretty creative. She planned monthly exhibits and put together orchestral, choral, and dramatic performances. She even used her teaching skills to teach kids elocution, basically public speaking, and coached drama groups for this organization. Along with teaching, her work with the Alliance was considered to be kind of like social work.
Okay, I want to take all her classes.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. So while working at the Education Alliance, Belle would meet Charles Henry Israels. He was an architect, 12 years older than her, and also volunteered at the Alliance. Well, in 1903, Belle and Charles would get married.
Oh, snap. Well, hopefully they were a match made in Architecture Education Alliance heaven.
Intro to architecture, here we come.
So, new season, same nonsense, right? So since Belle was married, it was customary for her to stop working at the Alliance, especially in the realm of social work and settlement work. Folks believed that it didn't mix with married life. But our girl was like, nah, I can still volunteer and work part-time.
That's right, Belle.
I don't even have comments for this anymore. Glad Belle didn't succumb to the BS.
That's right.
Yeah. And in my head, this is what she was thinking about social work and helping was like her life's work. Because in 1917, she was quoted by saying, "To think of others is as natural to the Jewish woman as to breathe. She gives and has been trained for generations to give with all her heart."
Interesting. So it sounds like she took her work even more seriously because of her background.
Exactly. And while volunteering and working part-time at the Alliance, Bell would have four kids.
Oh!
And three of them would make it to adulthood. Carlos, Miriam, and Joseph. The salary that she would make at the Alliance would help pay for their daycare.
Sounds very modern.
Yeah, very. I love that she was able to balance working with motherhood.
Yeah. But then tragedy would strike when her husband Charles passed away in 1911, leaving Bell as a single mother widow.
No, she was 34. That's so young. And he must have been 46. No. That's so young. How terrible.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot imagine. That's how old we are right now. Imagine you had three kids and you were widowed.
No.
That is awful. No.
Okay, I'm older than 34, and the thought of having three kids gives me hives.
You're like a month older than 34. You can still relate.
Yes, I can. That's what it's... Well, it's been a while, but do any of you ladies recall what else happened in 1911 in New York? We just talked about it last week a little bit.
Not at all. Too early for World War I.
Well, that's true. Well, what happened was the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory caught fire. We talked about it in episode 28, this week's birthday girl, Frances Perkins, because Frances had witnessed this fire. In hindsight, I wonder if Belle and Fran were having tea together, because that was the story. But I mentioned it earlier. We'll get back to that. But maybe we should do a refresher for those that don't remember, you know, like 100 plus episodes ago of what this fire meant and what it was.
Oh my gosh. I just realized, well, you said it 100 episodes ago. Sounds amazing. Go us. Woo woo. Okay. Sorry. I just had to toot our horn.
Toot
toot. Toot. Okay. Frances Perkins was FDR's Secretary of Labor /main player crafting the New Deal /America's leading advocate for industrial safety and workers' rights /the designer of public works programs /so on and so forth.
/.
How many slashes?
Four to start.
Well, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory was a horrific accident. You will have to consider that at the time, there weren't really any building codes, right? They had locked exits, faulty fire escapes, and no real fire sprinkler system. So this factory employed mostly immigrant women and children who were trapped in the building.
And like Jessica said, Frances saw it happen. She didn't read about it in the papers. She didn't hear about it from her friends or a White House briefing. She was there. She sees this building burning and, don't ask me why, gets closer, goes to investigate what is going on as if she was a firefighter or something. Trigger warning, we're about to give details on a tragedy, so skip 10 seconds if you would prefer to avoid that. Okay, Frances is investigating, and she sees women and children jumping out of the window to their deaths trying to escape the fire. 146 workers died that day. Witnessing the horrible accident at the factory became a pivotal moment in Frances' life. I mean, how could it not? It truly defined the paths and missions that she would take on next.
Yeah. What I guess we didn't touch upon was that the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory brought a lot of protests, and rightfully so. Before we get into that, though, we are left with Belle as a single mother widow. Some of the work that she did around this time included writing a pamphlet about childcare called The Child for the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. Then she landed a job as the Commercial Recreation Secretary for the Playground and Recreation Association. Pretty soon, she became a grievance clerk for the Dress and Waste Manufacturers Association. This group had just signed something called the Protocol of Peace, with the union to try and stop all the strikes happening in the garment industry.
So all this happened after the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory tragedy?
Yes. Bell would deal with thousands of workers' complaints and eventually became the head of the Labor Department. There was, I guess, some friction with the higher-ups, though. Because in 1916, when a new board was elected, Bell's position was terminated, aka she was fired.
What? She became the head of the Labor Department of the U.S. government or of the Dress and Waist Manufacturers Association?
She worked in the Labor Department of the Dress and Waist Manufacturers Association. Not government related yet. So, as a single mother with three kids, and we are telling her story today, you know that didn't stop her. Again, I just mentioned how her life's work is being able to help people. Bell kept volunteering. She would get involved with two groups, the Committee of 14 and the Citizens Committee. The Committee of 14 was a group working to shut down New York's brothels. And the Citizens Committee she was a part of worked on investigating ties between gambling and police corruption.
I mean, I would expect nothing less of Bell. Talk about taking on big stuff, though. Jeez.
Yeah, those are some heavy causes. But a single mom needs to make money, so I hope her volunteer work came with a stipend or something.
It did, thank goodness. By 1913, a reform movement grew out of that work, and the group helped elect a new city government. The mayor, John Paroi Mitchell, brought in several social reformers. So Bell's influence was definitely making waves.
Amazing.
Glad to hear it. Yeah.
Yes. So when John gets elected, he appoints Henry Moskowitz to become president of the Municipal Civil Service Commission. Henry was also a settlement worker and industrial mediator. So needless to say, Henry and Bell would cross paths.
My eyebrows are sky high over here.
Me too. Okay, do I hear a romance brewing, or is it going to be like last week and we're going to learn that it was like his second cousin?
A twist.
No, this is him. It is he. But before I get to where we're alluding to, let's just talk about Henry like a little bit, because he seemed like a pretty cool dude. Because before even meeting Bell, he got his PhD in philosophy. Oh. He did a lot of reform campaigns in the same groups and circles that Bell was a part of. He was also one of the founders of the NAACP, the National Association of Advancement of Colored People, in 1909.
Nice.
So anyway, what we were guessing is true. Eyebrows raised and all, Henry Moskowitz would marry Bell in 1914.
Oh, yeah. I had already forgotten that you mentioned that her last name in the beginning was Moskowitz, so...
You did?
Well, okay, what's the age difference this time? Does Bell have a thing for older men, or was that a one-off?
We love to know if she's got a type.
He was born in 1879, so not that much older. Just 3 years.
Okay, okay. So she doesn't necessarily have an older gentleman type. Fun fact.
She doesn't like the silver foxes. She just likes foxes. Okay, so yeah, they are married. They're doing their community work with the local government organizations. Then in 1918, Al Smith was running for governor, and Bell with her hubby decided to support him. Now, if you can recall in our episode 28, Lady Frances, Al was the guy who appointed her to become the chairwoman of the Industrial Commission.
I don't recall. Thank you for the reminder. Part of me feels like I should make you pause the story right now, and I should go listen to episode 28 because of all these overlaps that keep showing up. And it sounds like they're going to keep coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did not get the memo that we had homework before coming on to this episode.
Me neither.
Yep. So, yeah, assignments have been assigned.
It's a little late.
We have failed.
It's okay. You know, there's no test. Just pause and go listen.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So, but before we get there, about Frances, and let's talk about this, because Bell was instrumental in getting Al elected to become governor. In 1917, women were allowed to vote. And Bell worked her butt off to get women to vote and to vote for Al. A source that I read said that she single-handedly won the women's vote for Al.
amazing. I love that she not only fought to get women out to vote, but also to go for her candidate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, low-key, every time I see Al's name, I think it says AI.
Me too.
That's where we're at in this world.
That's where we are. Yeah.
That's where we're at. I can't even.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Wow. I mean, I keep saying, well, have I said wow or have I been skipping it?
I don't know.
Just everything she does amazes you.
Wow. Belle becoming a major lobbyist, political player. Get it, girl. Make them moves. Get all the ladies to exercise their right to vote. Hopefully Al was a good governor.
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.
Yeah, so Belle is becoming buddy-buddies with Al, okay? Her community involvement and experience made Belle become Al's most trusted advisor, publicist, and strategist. I would say more than Frances, which we thought to believe in her episode.
Ooh, I love this. So it sounds like Belle was really integral to the work that Al was doing.
She was. And now with Al's attention, Belle suggests that they start a reconstruction commission. Belle would become the executive secretary, leading the charge to put reports on all kinds of big issues like labor and industry, the rising cost of 6521 living, public health, education, and reorganizing the government. The general vibe of these reports were very progressive for the time. They basically said, hey, let's get businesses to step up and reform voluntarily. But if they won't, the government's going to step in. Which basically created the framework for Governor Al to create things like the Reconstruction Labor Board, a State Highways Transport Committee, and a State Housing Board. He really leaned on Belle for her advice and sharp political instincts during his first term.
Wow. She's the architect, in a way, of all these reforms, committees, and boards, you know?
Yeah, totally. She's the brains behind the operation.
Yeah. So Governor Al lost the presidential election, but he was still able to appoint Belle to be a part of the team planning a bi-state authority to manage the Port of New York and New Jersey.
I love this appointment. Can't wait to see what she does with it.
Okay, I missed it. He ran for president? When? And who won instead?
So this was in 1928. Herbert Hoover would win this election. Al was the first Catholic nominee for a major party, and a lot of sources say that it's his religion that was the reason why he lost.
Mm. Interesting. I always forget that being Catholic can play against someone in U.S. politics.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, homegirl Belle was loyal to Governor Al and the work that he was doing. Here's a quote from our other homegirl, Frances, regarding Belle. She never belittled him. She never in the slightest way betrayed him. Never grabbed credit for herself. She gave it to the governor. So between the three of them and their progressive ways of thinking, they often were collaborators. So I believe in all of the circles that I mentioned in episode 28 that Frances was a part of, I think Belle was all up in there too.
I like hearing they were like a power team.
Yeah, it's fun to hear about another lady who was working sort of side by side with another one. Also sounds like Belle was invested in the cause and making sure that things got done.
Initially, in my research, I thought of Belle as a political strategist who influenced a lot of policies and infrastructures that we know about today. But I also see her name tied to terms like campaign manager and public relations. When the work of the Port Authority came about, Belle created an advertisement to advocate for it. She used film, which was new at the time. So in some circles, Belle is considered a PR innovator, too.
Oh.
Of course she is. She reminds me of episode 24, Catherine Bauer, too. She also used film to expose her public housing, urban reform ideas. I bet you these ladies knew each other, too. They had to. They were shaking and baking regarding similar issues around the same time, even if they were active on opposite coasts of the U.S.
So true. There's definitely overlap. That's really smart, though, to start using marketing for these new public projects to get community buy-in.
Yeah, I think so, too. So Governor Al's presidential nomination was credited to Belle, actually. After he lost, Belle opened her own PR firm called Publicity Associates. Ooh. She would become the only woman to be a part of the executive committee of the Democratic National Committee during that time that Al ran for president. And then the later when Franklin D. Roosevelt ran. In fact, she is credited as being the first publicity director for the state Democratic Committee. She would train Eleanor Roosevelt and Mary Dewson during their campaign.
Wow.
So the first publicity director for the state Democratic Committee, and I'm assuming the state was New York, was a woman. Belle is a super trailblazer.
Yeah, no kidding. That's awesome that she spearheaded that initiative and role. Also loving that she's a business owner.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Casual side note.
So when Roosevelt got elected, we can recall that Frances was made Secretary of the Department of Labor. Well, our girl Belle didn't necessarily hold a cabinet position because, I mean, she had her own business, okay? But she did serve as an advisor to a certain degree. She talked a lot about FDR, about some of her infrastructure policies, and ideas like hydroelectric power, parks, and infrastructure.
Because you know our girl is an entrepreneur. She can consult with the government, but she got her own thing she gotta run.
That's right.
Yeah. The accomplishments that Roosevelt was able to make in infrastructure is credited to the groundwork that Governor Al was able to do and include in his campaign for president. Which, I mean, we can give credit to Belle for that. One person claimed that Belle was Al's protege, but he corrected them by saying, no, no, no. Belle was my mentor.
I love that. I'm glad to know he knew how important she was and wanted to give her credit for all the work that she was doing because it made him look good.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a publicist outside of the government sphere, Belle also managed the Empire State Building's publicity. This means that if it wasn't for her PR genius, we would never see the photography of the construction process, and most notably, the iconic Lewis Hines photo. I'll be sure to include this in the show notes.
Oh, the one where all the workers are happily sitting on a beam, just waving and smiling like their lives are not at risk? Again, wow.
That's funny, but okay, wait. That no way. This photo is super famous, but I will be honest, I did not know what it was specifically for at all, like which building, etc.
Right.
But I love to know that Belle was behind making it so famous, like why we know it today.
Yep. Iconic. All right. So in December of 1932, Belle fell in front of her brownstone steps located on West 94th Street. She broke her arm and later suffered from an embolism, and on January 2nd, 1933, Belle would pass away at the age of 55. Some accounts would say that Belle was the most powerful woman in America. Some called her the most powerful woman in American politics.
Wait, what?
Ugh, she was 55, OMG. This is just like Catherine Bauer tripping while hiking, also in her 50s. These ladies did so much, and then they just trip and fall. Well, Belle was the most powerful woman in American politics, and a lot of the infrastructure reform and laws in place for the urban environment that can be traced back to her are amazing. I can't believe I've never heard her name until today. Belle has to become more of a household name. We need to be studying her more in American history or civics classics.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. How have we never heard of her? She was so influential in those early reforms. Also, this is just insane how she died. Like, she had so much life left to live and politics to work on. Ugh. It's also just a really dramatic way to die.
Yeah.
You know, same with Catherine Bauer. But I'm glad to know that she was able to accomplish so much in the amount of time that she had. You know, she still did so much. And I'm really glad we were able to learn about her.
All right. So now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. So without further ado, drum roll, please. Regina Gray!
Regina!
All right, y'all. So now the name should sound familiar because we did a charrette back in December where we interviewed Miss Regina. For those of you that need a refresher, Regina is the director of the Affordable Housing Research and Technology Division in the Office of Policy Development and Research at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, a.k.a. HUD.
Woo! Yay, Regina! We had such a great time chatting with her about the HUD competition a few months ago.
We really did. I learned so much that day. I'm excited to highlight Regina today.
Yeah, her department conducts studies and provides research assistance on issues related to building codes, standards, and technologies, land use planning, and housing issues related to green construction and energy efficiency, and so much more.
I can definitely see a connection with Belle, just like in the governmental work and working on policies, and how they both are working on architectural-related issues in government, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Regina does such important work, too. I remember she collaborates with federal agencies on sustainability issues. She walks the talk.
Yeah. And then, so the other connection that I saw, too, is that prior to working for HUD, she was also a social science analyst looking at urban development and housing-related things. So, again, I feel like she's the modern-day Belle Moskowitz. She just needs a PR firm. But she was on our show, so she did PR for the competition. So win-win all around. Connections.
Amazing. I love that. I wish I could start a new career. I mean, I could, but...
You still got time.
That's true. Well, you just had like a different path than us, but they still landed in...
Influencing architecture. Yeah.
Yeah, and the built environment. And it's so amazing.
Yeah, agreed. All right, before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you all for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and caryatid, along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your neighbors, your family, tell them all. Tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website at shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast.
You can also find links to all these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on X, formerly known as Twitter, at shebuildspod. Until then, see ya!
Bye!
Adios!
Entree architect repented. Sorry, let me do this again. Too many prayers.